Saturday outside police stations around the city. Demonstrators taking part in the Palm Sunday takeover proposed an ordinance designed to end excessive force and corruption within the department. Activists have been demanding reform since the release of the Laquan McDonald police shooting video. Breaking news on the web at westernjournalism.com. This is USA Radio News.
At GoDaddy, a domain name is the beginning of something awesome. Use it to create a website to promote your business. Open an online store to sell your products. Start a blog. Build your brand. You can even connect your domain to your LinkedIn or Facebook page. And GoDaddy customer support is always ready to help. What will you do with your domain name? Get a free domain with website from GoDaddy.com, starting at $1 a month. Annual purchase of website builder required. Price valid first year only. See website for details.
Hotel giant Marriott is merging with Starwood Hotel and Resorts after appearing to be outbid. Starwood said last week it would accept a bid from an investors group headed by Chinese insurance company Ongbing. Marriott's new bid values Starwood at $13.6 billion, and the merger creates the biggest hotel chain in the world. Well, it's not a sight you see every day, but the tail of the tape shows an Easter bunny getting into a brawl at a New Jersey mall. Sarah Lee Kessler has details.
The rabbit was at the Newport Mall in Jersey City to shake hands and pose for pictures on Sunday, but police say something set him off.
Oh, show us the Easter bunny. Oh, the Easter bunny throwing hands.
Cell phone video showing the costume character removing his head with its floppy ears and throwing punches at a man in a brown shirt. Security guards had to separate the bunny and the customer. No word yet on what started the mall brawl. Sarah Lee Kessler, New Jersey.
A state-of-the-art ship funded by the UK government for polar research may soon be christened Bodie McBoatface if online voters get their way. The NERC asked for the names that were inspirational, such as a historical figure or a landmark. However, the moniker RRS Bodie McBoatface, submitted by user James Hand, quickly became the crowd favorite with more than 26,000 votes. This is USA Radio News.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host. And this is NAMI's hour, compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We work out of our houses. We have no office, no paid staff. Somebody once told me that the commute was good to go from the living room to the kitchen, but that's so it has its plus side, I guess. But what we try to do is try to help people who have someone in their family who may have a mental illness or someone they know, next door neighbor, could be somebody they work with. And we do it in various ways. We run a support group for families and people. Sometimes they're in a crisis and they don't know what to do and, you know, how to go about it. And we help them out. We tell them, we try to direct them in the right area. We also, my wife and I right now are teaching what they call a family-to-family class. It's a 12-week course for families, members, or, again, it doesn't have to be blood. And we try to help people understand what to do and what not to do in a crisis situation, what to say, what not to say, drugs, side effects, how to handle problems that occur more so with people with mental illness, you know, like not taking their meds and so on and so forth. And everything we do is free. There's no charge. We have a course called Educating the Educators because, unfortunately, in this society we're in today, 9 times out of 10, both parents have to work, and therefore the teachers are with the children more than the parents during the week. I'm not saying it's bad or what, it's just that the way society is right now. So we try to enlighten the teachers if they see something, what to look for, and so on and so forth. If you need to get a hold of us, phone number is 908-284-0500. We don't have it manned 24/7, but someone checks it at least once a day, and we promise we'll be back to you within 24 hours. We are very, very privileged today to have with us the Hunterdon County Prosecutor, Anthony Kearns, and the Assistant County Prosecutor, Kelly Daniels. I can't thank you guys enough for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here with me for an hour. I'm so glad you found the time to come. I really am, because I find it sometimes people don't know exactly everything that's going on in the county and what's being trying to be brought into action and whatnot and so on and so forth. So, pardon me. I always ask people who come here, and I've been doing this for 5 years now. I find it very interesting how people get into their jobs. You know, some people say, oh, I always wanted to do this since I was a kid. And, you know, some people say, well, something happened to my family, blah, 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 and that's why I went this way. And people like me who said, I don't know, I got a job and I took it. You know, I needed the money. I had 4 kids and a mortgage, you know, car payments. So it wasn't, in my case, it wasn't anything I wanted to do. But I've had people say, I've wanted to do this, you know, be a teacher since I was a kid, yada, yada. Mr. Kearns, I know that you have had a previous job set before you became prosecutor or lawyer.
That's correct, Larry, yes.
And want to just elaborate a little bit for me what it was?
First of all, let me say thank you and good afternoon to the listeners, and thank you for having us on. And also in hearing you begin the program and talk about NAMI, to say thank you to all the members of NAMI. I will say they have been a tremendous asset to my office and to law enforcement in general, in helping to educate us, to work with us, and to be a support to what we have to do. So,
right.
So we're grateful for NAMI, and we're so appreciative of all that they do. In terms of my history, you know, I did go into the mental health field. I have a master's degree in counseling psychology. After I got done college, one would have thought I was going to go into the funeral business, since that was my father's business.
Mm-hmm.
Up there in White House. And I have 7 sisters, and I was the only boy, and I think I liked my newfound freedom, and I didn't go back home. I went and got another degree in graduate school, and I did that for a couple of years. And the focus of my work, the majority of my work was with substance abuse, although certainly I dealt with comorbid illness, the mental health and mm-hmm. the substance abuse, and working with families and adolescents, and very much enjoyed that work, but felt compelled to go on in school, and I pursued a law degree up in Boston, and then came down here, worked for the Attorney General's office, then went into private practice, and shortly after the governor was elected the first time, I was approached by his office and by Senator Daugherty mm-hmm. to consider taking the position of prosecutor. It wasn't something that I really sought, but I have enjoyed every moment of it, and certainly have no regrets, and feel privileged to have served in this role.
Well, I feel that most of the population feels very grateful that you're in it for what you've done over the year, you know, that you've been here. I just find it. God bless your father, 7 daughters. You know, I only had one, and it was like, whoa. Yeah, I had 4 kids, and 3 boys, and, you know, and 1 girl, but, you know. Well, Alicia, we were talking about before, she's got 5 sisters, you know.
Right.
So, you know, God bless her father, too. You know. Kelly, how did you get into this?
Well, this is my second career. My first career is I was a registered nurse for about 8 years or so. And first off, good afternoon to you and the listeners as well. I was an RN. I worked in intensive care for about 8 years. And then I decided to get my law degree. I expected to probably go into public health or something to do with medical. And, you know, life often has different plans for people.
Sure.
So when I got out of law school, my first job was I clerked for a judge in Passaic County as she was a criminal, the criminal presiding judge. And then from there, I became an assistant prosecutor in another county and then did that for about 2.5 years and then was doing criminal defense for most of my career. And now I am with the Hunterdon County Prosecutor's Office, feel very privileged to have the position that I have. I think I was always a prosecutor at heart, so I feel like I'm home finally, and I really enjoy my work.
Well, that's good. It's always great to enjoy your work. I've had a few jobs where I couldn't stand it, but, you know, trying to make the ends meet, you know, you did what you had to do, you know, but I understand that Hunterdon County has a mental health jail diversion grant. Would you either, one of you, like to speak to that?
I'll speak more generically, and Kelly can, I think, speak more to the specifics. But we were fortunate to obtain a grant from the state of New Jersey. It was offered, and with Kelly's help and some of our colleagues at the county, we and Hunterdon Drug Awareness as well participated. And Kelly, you can fill in all the details of all the players, but it was a unified effort. We identified the grant, we sought assistance from these partners because we believe we have a need here in Hunterdon to address our mental health population in terms of jail diversion, because when someone suffers from a mental illness, they may do things that require them or require law enforcement to become involved and require the judicial system to become involved. Right. But it's not wrong that the law enforcement get involved or that the judicial system get involved. What we see, though, is despite that involvement, the answer in terms of disposition might not be through those systems, that in fact it might be best that they avoid being put into the quote-unquote system, and that their whatever precipitated their behavior that brought in these other systems really can be treated in a way much better outside of that system. But you know, having the resources to do that was difficult, and we were so delighted to see this opportunity, and we seized upon it. We see that Union County has a tremendous mental health diversionary program going on right now. We're looking to the different models that exist currently. Hunterdon is somewhat unique. I think we're the crown jewel of New Jersey, Hunterdon County. And there's so many great attributes of Hunterdon County. But one of the limitations is that we are somewhat of a rural county. We don't have the infrastructure that some of the more urban areas have in terms of transportation, in terms of services. So we are creating this diversionary program with the resources that we have and trying to make it work here in Hunterdon. We think we're going to be successful. But it is causing us to think, to again, borrow what we can, but create new aspects of a diversionary program that will fit into Hunterdon. Kelly, do you have?
Yeah, it's some of that is a challenge because the way the program works is when someone applies for the program, and it is a prosecutor-led program. So, for example, a criminal defense attorney may say, we have someone who we would like to be in your program. They apply. There's an actual application that they fill out. And then First Assistant Prosecutor Deborah Factor will review the applications, and she will, at first blush, decide whether someone is appropriate or not. We have them then meet with someone from Hunterdon Drug Awareness to have a mental health interview, also substance abuse interview, because we know that many mentally ill people have a co-occurring substance abuse problem. So they get a dual interview, if you will, evaluation. And then if Hunterdon Drug Awareness approves them, and puts a program, treatment program, into place for them. Then they come into our program. And the way it works is we try to come up with a way that the individual will not have a criminal history based on this offense at the end of the program. That's not always possible, however, because we do see that some people already come to us with a criminal history. And that's just the nature of having had mental illness and not had a diversionary program before, the benefit of that. So we do take some people who already have a criminal history, and we hook them up with services, which obviously includes their mental health services, their medication, whatever it is that Hunter and Drug feels that they need. And they, starting actually in April, will be our first official diversionary step, if you will. They have to come back to court every month before the judge, and we have basically a status conference to discuss how they're doing. We get updates from their providers. And if all goes well at the end of the program, either their charges will be dismissed or downgraded, whatever's appropriate in that particular case. And we are seeing that things like transportation, that is presenting a little bit of a challenge, but these are things we're working on and trying to work with different partners to solve those problems, because we want people to succeed in the program. We want the program to succeed. It's a pilot program right now.
Right.
So, you know, as things come up, and they have been, we're working with people to figure out.
Is there a criteria, for lack of a better word, for the crimes that a person has committed to be in this program? I mean, they're not, well, I don't know, I'll let you answer that. Is it like shoplifting or, you know?
Well, sir, I think one of the biggest demarcations is it needs, you know, a nonviolent offender is who we're going to be working with, ideally. That's really what the limitation to the program. Every case will be looked at on a individual basis, and those facts and circumstances will be considered. Always, you know, as a prosecutor's office, and again, this is a prosecutor-led program.
Right.
It's not a judicial program. We have an obligation to preserve the quality of life here in Hunterdon County, to keep people safe, and so we have to look at it from that angle first, and then we look to the individual and say, how do we best serve this individual? And again, looking at the facts and circumstances of that individual's life and what is going on, and try to structure a plan for that individual.
All right, that makes sense. What happens if someone is in the program, and is it the same amount of time, or is it vary with individuals, or?
We're going to be looking at the individual, but we will work with the court if we, you know, without, it's difficult to get too specific, but I think the best way to say is we will look at the individual, what's going on in their life. If there is some difficulty, they're going to be held accountable for doing certain things.
Sure.
as they move through this diversionary program. It could be, I'm not saying necessarily it's it, that might be that they need to get a job, they need to get back in school, they need to continually take their medication. It's a way of treating instead of punishing them, for lack of a better word, for their behavior. It's saying, all right, this behavior appears to have been a consequence or precipitated by their illness, and so we want to treat the illness.
Sure.
That's what we want to focus on, and we want to get them back into becoming productive members of society, and everybody wins at that point.
Right, right. What happens if they screw up or they slip up or whatever? Are they then...
Well, it's happened, believe it or not,
in
other programs. it does happen. And again, there you look at the nature of the quote unquote screw up. What what may have precipitated that. I mean, quite frankly, sometimes there's things in a person's life. It could be a death. It could be some type of trauma. It could be we have to factor all that in, and then you also factor in what was the, again, quote unquote, screw up. What was the nature of that? What was the extent of that? And all that will be looked at, and a determination will be made.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that they screw up, they go right back to jail.
It doesn't mean that. It could mean
it
that.
It could mean that, yes. Right. But it doesn't necessarily.
Right.
Okay. All right. What happens after the grant expires? Do we continue the program with funds from the county, or how does that work?
Well,
I'm asking because I really don't know.
So we're building the foundation right now. Mm-hmm. We're putting this program together, and our hope is that it's going to be of great success, and it will evolve into such a successful program that we can turn, I think, to the county, and maybe if there's more state money available to seek that. But if in fact it becomes what we hope it does, it will be of great cost savings to the county.
Sure.
and to the community. So we need to look at how to try to keep that going. But what gear we're in right now is first gear, and we're trying to get it right. And we're realizing mm-hmm. that 2 years isn't that far down the road, but we want to get it up and going first, and then we'll deal with that as it gets closer in time.
Well, I can say this: if NAMI can help you in any way,
let us know.
You know,
that's great. Yes,
you know, if we can, we will. Mm-hmm. You know, because we actually think it's a great program. You know, because there's more people in jails with mental illness than there are in hospitals. So, you know, if it diverts somebody from going to jail and restructures their life for them a little bit and gets them back in society, in the community.
I think so too. And you know, we're talking for 2 years, $150,000, which is a lot of money. But in the grand scheme, putting that into in its proper context, you say, wow, we're really trying to accomplish a lot for a very little bit of money. I mean, when we're not just talking about dealing with one individual, right. We're talking about multiple lives here that we're trying to affect and redirect,
right.
and cause them to go in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, so like I said, if NAMI can help you in any way, please reach out.
Great. Okay.
Would either of you explain the special needs database for first responders? Because I have no clue what it's about. I have an idea,
I'll speak to that generally again, and Kelly can.
Yeah, Kelly
speak
brought
more
a note, so she can.
She's got a note.
Yeah.
I have a vast void in front of me. Larry and I got to speak before the radio program started, and he talked about a program that he had gone to. It's called CIT, Crisis Intervention Training, which is a training mostly for law enforcement to have them trained over a 40-hour period in a 1 week's time, where they learn how to deal with somebody that's emotionally disabled. And I think that's the term they use, ED, mm-hmm. emotionally disabled. And because what happens is police officers, when they go to the academy, they're trained in a specific way. When there's a crisis, they're trained to take charge and bring about some type of order so that they can keep everybody safe. That same approach might not work if somebody is in crisis, some type of mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
That, in fact, how the officer was trained might only aggravate that situation for that individual. So when we train our police officers to begin to understand and identify somebody with a mental health problem, that they're much better equipped to deal with the problem when the crisis is unfolding, and they might react very differently and actually cause the situation to settle down and nobody gets hurt. So it's an ideal situation. this program that you've just introduced, this identification program, borrows from that idea that if police officers and first responders were tipped off or had information ahead of time before responding to a certain home or dealing with a certain individual, that this person has a mental health issue or has had these issues in the past, and this is what's worked. For instance, and again, this is very general, but if somebody might be on the autism spectrum and they might not like to be touched,
right?
Or they might reach out and to touch something shiny, and they might reach for the badge or for the gun. That right. The officer who has no knowledge of the problem of the individual would react very differently if somebody lunged for his gun or if the person reacted somewhat violently if they were touched. If the officer could have that, or again, first responder had that information ahead of time, they will approach the individual, they will approach the situation very differently.
Right.
So we're in the process of putting together a program where residents of Hunterdon County can, and it's volunteer, on a volunteer basis, can fill out a form, identify their loved one, or the person themselves can even do it themselves, mm-hmm. identify themselves that I have these issues, I have this tendency, I have this, and here's what causes me problems, here's what I need, here's who you need to call if I'm in crisis.
Right.
All that information would be available to the first responder. It wouldn't go over the radio where mm-hmm. the public can hear it on the radio. It would go, we have something called the computer aided dispatch, which is by computer, and it goes into the police officer's police car, right. And they would read that. It would be confidential, and then they would be going into this scene with this this information ahead of time, and say, okay, we're gonna help be part of the solution here. We're not going to add to the problem
mm-hmm.
because we're not gonna rely on our training, which is proper and right, but not in that case. So we're gonna approach right. it a little bit differently.
Right.
Kelly, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you summed it up perfectly. I mean, the issue is that people who have developed mental disabilities or autism spectrum or other kinds of mental disabilities won't react to the police or first responders in the same way that someone else might. And if the first responders have no idea that this is who they're dealing with at that moment, things can get a little out of hand. Whereas if they knew, perhaps there's something that they could become aware of that might ease the situation for that particular individual. And that's our hope, that this information will be collected by, and again, it's on a voluntary basis, collected by communications here in Hunterdon, so that if, for example, a person goes missing, we see that sometimes,
mm-hmm.
Someone wanders and right. they don't get home in time, and now we're out looking for them. Perhaps we know their favorite place where they tend to go, and perhaps we know maybe they're afraid of dogs, and maybe we don't want to have, you know, if we think we've located them, we don't want to send a dog in. This kind of information is very helpful to bring the situation down and not, you know, perhaps be adversary where it doesn't need to be, and it may facilitate ending this, you know, ending the crisis in a better way than it might otherwise.
Does this go to EMTs and firefighters?
The plan is to the Hunterdon is again somewhat unique that typically law enforcement will respond to those. To
mm-hmm.
even to they call it squad calls,
right,
you know, the
right.
EMT calls. So typically they will have that, but ideally we do want all the first responders to have an understanding that this is the situation. But
sure.
our hope is in most instances the police will be there as well.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of times they come anyway with
right.
you know, so but yeah, it would be make sense if they would have the same information.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, you know, I don't read the paper much, but it seems like every time you pick up a paper, whether it's a Star Ledger or the Democrat or whatever, you always see more arrests for drugs, possession, using, whatever. Have you seen over the past few years a large increase in the use of drugs and along with arrests going high?
A remarkable increase. Certainly in my 5 years as prosecutor, it's increased from 2014 to 2015. There was a over 300% increase in overdoses.
Wow.
Opiate overdoses. And that's really, I think, what we're talking about for the most part. Of course, you still have your other drugs and your other issues,
right.
Alcohol, drugs, marijuana. But it's been such an epidemic, the heroin crisis, and that's multi-determinative. There's lots of reasons for that. But if you look at the counties where it's significant, Hunterdon is not unlike, you know, a Sussex County, a Morris County, a Monmouth County. We're all struggling. Ocean County is I think in 2013, I believe, had approximately 117 overdose deaths. I think that was the year. So they're very much in crisis. We've been making tremendous efforts to try to stay in front of it, to try to get to our high schools, to get to our community organizations, working with Hunterdon Prevention Resources, the Safe Communities Coalition, really talking to anybody that will listen to say we have a crisis here, going to senior citizen groups, telling them to get their medication off
right.
off the shelves. I think one of the biggest this whole substance abuse field, you know, Nancy Reagan passed away recently, and, mm-hmm. and God rest her soul. She made an effort in the 80s to just say no, you know, and I think, you know, people have mocked that, laughed at it. It was an effort, and I think in part it was successful. But I think when we talk about fighting this epidemic, that's what it is. It's a fight, it's a war, and it has to be fought on multiple fronts. It can't just be law enforcement. It can't just be schools. It can't just be prevention. It can't just be doctors. It has to be all of us working together, because it's that insidious. It's that overwhelming. And if you think that, you know, one front is going to win the war, you're wrong. I mean, because it is so pervasive that it really is going to take all of us. And you know, I always say this, and I say this to the listeners right now. Don't think that it's not your problem. Anyone, you know, within the earshot of my voice right now, it is everybody's problem. Because even if you know, have your children are raised, you don't have children, there's no reason for anyone to develop an opioid dependence in your family, which don't be so sure of. But if that's where you're at, it's your neighbor's kid. It's the kid down the street,
right.
The one that has that opiate addiction that will be breaking in to houses and burglarizing houses and driving impaired because they have to go and get the drug and then you have to drive back. It really is a societal problem. It's everyone's problem, and therefore we are asking everyone to step up and to participate, whether it be as simple as getting, you know, the old medications off your shelves and properly disposing of them. You know, we know people will go into an open house, the house is for sale, and they'll go. They're not there to see the house. They're there to check out the medicine cabinet. People work. People may go into construction, whatever, utility. Mm-hmm. We go in a house. They're in the house. They're opening up the cabinets. And then those pills that you might not even know are missing anymore, you know, are now out on the street. And so so everybody does play a part.
Right. And it's, you know, some people's perspective is very tainted at times. I can't tell you how many times I've heard, well, this is Hunterdon County. It's one of the richest counties in the country. We shouldn't have mental illness. We shouldn't have drug problems. You look at them and say, what? Mm-hmm. You know? I had gone to a conference. It was in Delaware. And there was a state trooper there who worked undercover in drugs and stuff. And he was saying that the group, the Hells Angels, he says, all you used to see was headbands, leather jackets, boots, motorcycles. He says, not anymore. And somebody said, well, what is it now? He says, now they wear suits and ties. He says, because now they have to fit into the community where they want to sell their drugs. He says, and if it's a suit and tie community, they'd stand out like a sore thumb, and we'd pick them up in a heartbeat. He says, but if they're wearing a suit and tie and got the hair cut and everything, and they're clean shaven and all their tats are covered, he says, you know, and it's got to thinking, you know, he's right, you know. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's right. At least he was, you know, where he worked at it.
Well, and I think in Hunterdon County, we're foolish to believe that there's not a gang presence. I mean, we certainly know that there's Bloods and there's Crips and that
right.
there's. But again, they've learned how to assimilate into the community, and you know, something that we in law enforcement are aware of and are watching but it's not only gangs bringing it in. Our young people are going out.
Oh yeah,
into you know in Southern County, going mm-hmm. down to Trenton. The eastern part, they're going into Plainfield or Newark. Western part, they're going out to Easton, Pennsylvania. And they're bringing this heroin back, buying it rather cheaply, maybe $3 or $4 a packet out
right.
out in the urban area, bringing it back and making a profit on it. Not so much to become a kingpin, but enough to supply their own habit and support their own habit. And so it's plentiful. Heroin is plentiful here in Hunterdon. There used to be a sense that Hunterdon did have a bubble around it. When I came in over five years ago, that was the sense that Hunterdon was immune from a lot of these issues. And it may have been at one time, because if you remember, Route 78 ended first at the 287
yeah.
split,
right.
then Berkeley Heights.
Right.
So you had to go 22, and then if you wanted to take 78, you had to get off into Berkeley Heights, and if you wanted to get into mm-hmm. Newark. When the bad guys would come out to Hunterdon County, they would get here, and they didn't know their way around. There wasn't streetlights. They would get lost in the back roads, and they said, it's not worth it.
Right.
We're not going. Well, with social media, with the invention of the GPS and whatnot, they can come in and out of our county unfettered. So
yep.
you have this highway infrastructure system that is greatly improved, and then you have all this technology. They can be anywhere they want to be in Hunterdon County as easily as they can be on Clinton Avenue in,
sure.
in Newark. So
absolutely,
it's guess what? It's a business. And there's money out here, so
there's
a profit to be made, and I always use this analogy. If somebody comes here to Flemington and opens up a hamburger stand and they're not selling hamburgers, they're going to close. If somebody comes here to Hunterdon County and wants to sell drugs and they don't sell drugs, they can't sell the drugs, they're going to leave. But there's a demand; they are selling it. It is here, so that's where again we come
right.
together collectively. Law enforcement has its role to try to prevent the drugs from coming, to arrest the dealers, to arrest people in possession, to get them and hopefully get them into drug court and move them forward. But also, you know, way ahead of that, the schools, the education, the prevention, the family support, all these other factors come in, because if we can work on the demand piece and eliminate the demand, that's one front. To eliminate the product is another front, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to work
sure.
together.
Absolutely, it's just, you know, it's just amazing to see how much it has risen over the past 15 years or so. You know, I've been here a long time. And when they tell me it's the richest county, I go, what the hell am I doing here? You know?
Yeah.
But to see the change, you know, in it. And see, like I said in the papers, you know, this one was arrested for possession. That one was stopped for, you know, taillight out, and they wound up seeing, you know, this, this, and this in the car. You know, that sort of thing. It's just mind-boggling, you know. There's been, how did you say it, Narcan?
Narcan is a antidote, an opiate antidote. So it basically reverses the effect of the opiate, which is a, and I'll let my nurse here to my left explain it, but it's a, it's a, it's a depressant, and it will suppress the respiratory system to the point where someone will stop breathing if they take too much, and that's the overdose. They take so much that it shuts down your system. The Narcan will, as soon as it's administered, will reverse that, but you have to administer it within such time the person, you know, I don't know what the period of time is, but they have to be able to, you have to be able to revive them. It can't be too far. It's mm-hmm. not like, you know, 3 days later you can revive them. It's a very limited amount of time to be able to. They have to be in respiratory distress, I guess, and then you provide the Narcan to save their life. Kelly, maybe right. You can talk
well,
more about that.
I'm not sure of the exact time period either, other than to say that's why. I mean, it is a short period of time, and it does affect the respiratory system, which is why it's the antidote. It revives that portion, which is the overdose, and that's the push to have. You know, you see all across the country to have first responders with Narcan to be available to them, because the amount of time, it's not endless. It's
right.
A finite period of time, and the quicker, obviously, the better.
And it gets them time to get them to the hospital.
Right, but even more so, it immediately can reverse the respiratory failure that the person
okay.
has undergone as a result of the overdose.
Okay. How did this drug come about? I mean,
it's been around for decades.
Really?
Never heard of it before recently. It used to, again, Kelly, you would know better, but it used to be through with a shot. What do they call it?
An IV, you mean?
Well, or you would give the person a shot of Narcan, I think, early on, and it was administered by medical personnel.
Okay.
That's the difference now, is that our police officers are trained, and it's a nasal spray, and they spray up mm-hmm. the nasal cavity, and that is sufficient to revive them. But in my understanding, it's been around for decades.
It has. It's been used medically for exactly that purpose. Now the push is to get it outside of the hospital
right.
into the community.
Right, right.
But Narcan's been around for a very long time. It's not a new drug.
No, I just, you know,
yeah.
Maybe it's me, and I haven't heard of it till just recently when it started. You know, when they would say, like, you know, the officer used Narcan to revive the person so they could get him to the hospital. And, you know, it's just the first thing that crosses my mind is, does the person who is being revived realize they're getting a second chance at life? And, you know, get the hell off the drug. But like you said, they do it on Friday and they have it again on Monday or
something.
Well,
I mean,
you know?
we've had that instance. Now, you know, everybody's an individual. And again, just we were talking about the mental health mm-hmm. and each person's an individual with their own story, with their own. For some, the fact that they've had to be revived with Narcan, they might get it. That might be their bottom, quote unquote, that they say, I am not going to, you know, I'm going to go and get help, and I'm going to move beyond this. Others are, and I'm not saying you know, their illness is so debilitating, so severe, that they might treat the fact that they were revived much more cavalier, or in a cavalier way, and go back and use, because, you know, it is a reversal, and now they're going through withdrawal too. Mm. You know, an opiate withdrawal is painful. It's very, it's like having a very bad case of the flu. They are crawling out of their skin, so to speak, and they're wanting relief. And if they don't have that support, they don't have that network, they don't have that motivation to move into recovery, they may not, the fact that they've had to be revived might not do it for them.
Right. Right. It's just any addiction is tough. Like we were talking before the show, you know, I quit smoking 27 years ago. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, I can't tell you how many times on New Year's Eve I'm giving it up, you know, and then New Year's Day I'll be smoking again, you know. But what did it for me was they put me on an operating table, turned me upside down, scraped my vocal cords, and told me that was the only time they could do it. The next time they'd have to take them out, and I'd have to talk through that, mm-hmm. like, amplifier in the throat. And I just, with my big mouth, no, that's not happening, you know. So that scared the daylights out of me, and I quit. But, but even till today, 27 years later, someone lights a Marlboro up, I have to walk away because, you know, it's just, that's just the way it is, you know. And, but it's like, so, you know, and that's an addiction.
Well, and clearly the physical addiction for you is long gone. I mean, you're not going through withdrawal, right. But there is that psychological, and I think that's with heroin. I told you I worked in that field, mm-hmm. down in Baltimore, and I saw, you know, how bad it can get for some people, and it gets that bad, and that's all they can think about.
Right.
It's a horrible, horrible addiction to the point that it's a drug that scares me. And you know, I pray my children, my loved ones never fall victim to it. And that's, you fall victim to that drug. And, it's so much better if we can, with our young people, if we can work to keep them from ever becoming addicted rather right. than helping them recover. But there is hope. If one does fall victim, there is hope. There is recovery. There is, but it's a hard road. And our hope is to try to keep as many people as we can from going down that road.
Right, right. Pill drop boxes.
Yes.
We have them. I know.
We have them. We have them in several police stations. We have one at the courthouse here, at 65 Park Avenue in Flemington. You can come in during the court hours. It's right in the front of the lobby there. I know Reddington Police Department has one. I think Holland Township has one. The State Police Barracks have them in Perryville, right off of 78, mm-hmm. and in Kingwood off of Route 12. And then there's some other police departments that, again, I'm not remembering, but I think if you go to the Safe Communities Coalition website, Hunterdon Somerset Safe Communities Coalition, just Google it.
Right.
You can go on there. It will identify all the police departments that have drop boxes. I think the Attorney General's Office website has a list of all the PDs that have the drop boxes as well.
That's however they come up with that idea, I think it's great. Because, you know, like we were saying, you know, and you ever see these commercials where, you know, you see the woman goes to the cabinet, takes a med, then goes in, you see a kid taking it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right,
it's the
in
same
the mirror.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the mirror.
Yeah.
Know? And I think it's great that, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't just want to throw them out because, you know.
Well, first of all, I think I've heard them say, you know, you throw them down the toilet, then they get into the water system.
Right.
And they have environmental effects. You don't want to just throw them out because then they can be found. And there's a very safe way to dispose of them. Maybe a little inconvenient. You have to make a trip over to your police department or a neighboring police department or come down here to the courthouse. But, again, getting back to what I said, we all have a role to play in this. And, mm-hmm. and that might be someone's role is to help get rid of those and to really be ambassadors to others. And I'm amazed. I'll go and speak at a Rotary or go speak at a church group, and people will come up to me after and they'll say, I had no idea this was that bad. And so for us that are in the trenches, we know it's that bad. And you know, I stopped being surprised, but I think initially I was surprised when people said they didn't know it was that bad. But, you know, I guess that in some ways means we're doing our job. Our job is to, again, keep the quality of life here, keep people at peace. But the underbelly of it is the facts are underneath. There is this great and gross problem that right. We have to deal with. And so we do have to push into people's serenity, into that sense of peace, a little bit of fear, a little bit of agitation, maybe, to say, this is a problem. You need to be aware of it, particularly if you have children, and you need to keep them safe. Absolutely. And make them aware.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, people are finding more and more different things to use, like, you know, the pills and stuff. It's just, you know, it's just like, it amazes me, you know.
Well, and I think, you know, if the heroin problem wasn't so bad, it might, the pill problem might solve itself, because the pills become very expensive and much less available. Right. But it's almost like the young people, particularly, or anyone really, they become addicted in a way without much stigma. It's a pill. Maybe they had an accident, an injury, or they got into them at a party, and they're pills. And so they rationalize, these mm-hmm. are okay, these aren't sure. so bad. And then they find they ran out, and then they're stealing from over at grandma's house or the neighbor's house. And, you know, they're keeping this going. And then they get to the point where they can't get them anymore, or they're too expensive. And pills are much more expensive than heroin.
Right.
And then they turn to the heroin, which is readily available, and it's so much cheaper, and it's very, very pure. When I was down in Baltimore at that methadone program working for Johns Hopkins doing substance abuse counseling, I think the purity rate might have been the 20%, 30%. I mean, now it's in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It's so very pure and so very dangerous.
It is. You know what I don't understand, though, is how it's so available, how there's so much of it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's coming into our ports, yeah, particularly in exactly. New Jersey. So it's coming right in here. It's not getting, they call it stepped on. It's not getting cut up. It's in, mm-hmm. in a very pure form here in New Jersey, and before it's spreading out through the rest of the country, and it's abundant.
It is that. Is there a if someone wanted to reach out to you for whatever reason, is there a phone number or an email address they could?
Reach out in terms of they had an issue, they had a problem, or they certainly we have a main number at the prosecutor's office, which I'm happy to share.
Yeah, if they have a problem or something, you know.
That's 908-788-1129, and then there is an email address that they can send it to prosecutor@co. .hunterdon.nj.us.
Okay. You might want to say that again because...
Sure. That's prosecutor@co.hunterdon.nj.us.
Okay. Well, I can't tell you how pleased and thankful I am that you both came and out of your... And I know you have a busy schedule, so how you took time out of it just to be here with us. I think that it was wonderful. And like I said, if NAMI can help with any of your programs,
great.
You know, please don't hesitate to call or, you know, get in hold of us.
And thank you for what you're doing, Larry. I think you're getting the word out, and we appreciate that.
You know, it's amazing when they said the internet, you don't think about it, but we've gotten responses from just about every state in the union, you know. And, all right, now we have NAMI here, but they have them all over, you know. And it's just – so it's just – in fact, we even have one from Switzerland and Australia, you know. So
– well.
But hey, it's the internet, you know. They don't have to listen that Monday from 2 to 3. You know, they can do it on an archives, you know, later on. So, but it was, yeah, it's interesting, and I really want to thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
You've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and we've had the Hunterdon County Prosecutor Anthony Kearns and the Assistant County Prosecutor Kelly Daniels, who used to be a nurse and then became a prosecutor. But we do thank you for being on. And if you ever have a project or something you want to broadcast, let me know. We'll find a place to come on. All right. Thank you so much. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. We'll see you next week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
And you answered that very well, by the way.
Thank you.
And I do want to give that number one more
yes.
time.
No, I was going to say if someone wanted to reach out, is there, you know, an email or is there an email address or a website that they could go to get more information? What is it?
The website is www.princetonhouse.org. So okay. Really, princetonhouse.org, and you could get inpatient and outpatient information.
Okay.
Also, you could call inpatient, would be 609-497-3355. And that's if you're really concerned about danger to self, danger to others, or gravely disabled. I mean, really, that need a inpatient hospitalization. The outpatient program is 888 437-1610. And we have outpatients because we try to do it so that when you leave the hospital, there's a program around that will fit your need. Mm-hmm. And those programs are in Princeton, North Brunswick, Hamilton, Moorestown, Dennis, South Carolina.
M-O-O-R.
And Eatontown.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you both, Sarah and Robin. And you will come back.
I will come back, of course.
I'll have you both back.
I'd love to be here. Thank you.
You know, it wasn't so bad, was it?
Nope. No.